It's going to be a disaster. He chuckled.
Don't worry. Even if you don't do as well as the others, I don't have it in me to kick you out.
Something in that sounded funny. I sat back up. Are you saying that if the others do worse, one of them could be kicked out?
Maxon hesitated a moment, clearly unsure how to respond.
Maxon?
He sighed. I have about 2 weeks before they expect another cut. This is supposed to be a big part of it. You and Chris have the harder setup. A new relationship, fewer people to do the work, and while the culture is very celebratory, the Italians are easy to offend. Add to that the fact that you've hardly been able to do any work at all.
I wondered if the blood was visibly draining from my face.
I'm not supposed to help, but if you need something, please say so. I can't send either of you home.
When we'd had our first fight, a stupid spat over Celeste, I thought a piece of me shattered for Maxon. And then when Marley left so abruptly, I thought it did again. I was sure that every time something blocked my way, bits of my heart were crumbling to nothing. But I was wrong. There, lying in the hospital wing, my heart broke for the first time over Maxon Shreve. And the ache was unthinkable. Up until then, I could convince myself that I'd imagined everything I'd seen between him and Chris. But now I knew for sure. He liked her. Maybe as much as he liked me. I nodded at his offer for help, unable to say anything else. I told myself to tug my heart back, that he couldn't have it. Maxon and I started all this as friends, and maybe that's all we were meant to be, close friends. But I was crushed.
You should go, he said. You need sleep. You had a very long day.
I rolled my eyes. That wasn't the half of it. Maxon stood and straightened his suit.
I wanted to say so much more to you. I really thought I'd lost you today.
I shrugged. I'm fine, really.
I can see that now, but there were several hours today when I was forced to brace myself for the worst.
He paused, measuring his words.
Usually, of all the girls, you're the easiest to talk to about what we are. But I have a feeling that perhaps that's not the wisest thing to do right now.
Ducking my head, I gave a slight nod. I couldn't try to talk about my feelings for a person who obviously had a crush on someone else.
Look at me, America, he asked gently.
I did.
I'm fine with that. I can wait. I just want you to know. I'm not able to find words big enough to express how relieved I am that you're here, in one piece. I've never been so grateful for anything.
I was stunned into silence, the way I always was when he touched the shy places of my heart. A corner of myself worried at how easily I trusted his words.
Good night, America.
Chapter 18. It was Monday night. Or Tuesday morning. It was so late it was hard to tell. Chris and I had worked all day, finding appropriate swathes of fabric, having butlers hang them, choosing our clothes and jewelry, picking china, creating a rough draft of the menu, and listening to a language coach speak lines in Italian to us, in the hope that some of it would stick. At least I had the advantage of knowing Spanish, which helped me pick it up faster. They were so similar. Chris was just doing all she could to keep up. I ought to have been exhausted, but all I could think about were Maxon's words. What had happened with Chris? Why was she all of a sudden so close to him? Should I even care this much? But this was Maxon, and try as I might to pull away, I still cared about him. I wasn't ready to give up completely. There had to be a way to figure this out. As I debated everything that was happening, attempting to separate my issues from one another, it looked like all the pieces fell into one of four categories. My feelings about Maxon, Maxon's feelings about me, whatever was going on between Aspen and me, and my feelings about actually becoming a princess. Of all the things swimming in my head right now, it actually felt like the princess thing might be the easiest to tackle. At least in that area, I had something the other girls didn't. I had Gregory. I went over to my piano stool, drew out his diary, and hoped with all my heart that he would have some wisdom for me. He hadn't been born into royalty. He must have had to adjust. Based on what he'd said in his Halloween entry, he was already preparing for a big change in his future. I pulled up the covers, protecting the words from the world, and dove in.
I want to embody the old-fashioned American ideal. I have a beautiful family and I'm very wealthy, and both of those things suit this image, because they weren't handed to me. Anyone who sees me now knows how hard I worked for what I have. But the fact that I've been able to use my position to give so much where others either have not or could not has changed me from some faceless billionaire into a philanthropist. Still, I cannot rest on this. I need to do more, to be more. Wallace is in charge, not me, and I need to figure out how to properly give the public what they need without being seen as a usurper. A time may come when I will lead and can do what I see fit. For now, I will play by the rules and go as far as I can with that.
I tried to glean some actual wisdom from his words. He said to use your position. He said to play by the rules. He said not to be afraid. Maybe that should have been enough, but it wasn't. It didn't even feel close to helpful. Since Gregory failed me, there was only one other man I could count on. I went over to my desk, pulled out a pen and paper, and scribbled a brief letter to my father. Chapter 19. The next day flew by, and suddenly Chris and I were arriving at the other girls' reception in conservative gray dresses. "What's the plan?" Chris asked as we walked down the hall. I considered for a moment. I disliked Celeste and wouldn't mind seeing her fail, but I wasn't sure I wanted her to do it on this grand a scale. Be polite but not helpful. Watch Sylvia and the Queen for cues. Absorb everything we can, and work all night to make ours better. All right, she sighed. Let's go. We were on time, as was crucial to the culture, and the girls were already a mess. It was like Celeste was sabotaging herself. Where Elise and Natalie were in respectable deep blues, Celeste's dress was practically white. Put a veil on her and this was a wedding. Not to mention how revealing it was, especially when she stood next to any of the German women. Most of them were wearing sleeves to their wrists despite the warm weather. Natalie had been put in charge of the flowers and missed the detail that lilies were traditionally used at funerals. All the flower arrangements had to be removed hastily. Elise, though clearly more agitated than she usually was, appeared to be the image of calm. To our guests, she would look like the star. It was intimidating trying so hard to communicate with the women from the German Federation, who spoke very broken English, particularly when I had so much Italian in my brain. I tried to be hospitable, and despite their severe appearance, the ladies were actually quite friendly. It became clear pretty quickly that the threat of disaster was Sylvia and her clipboard. While the Queen graciously aided the girls in hosting the German guests, Sylvia walked the perimeter of the room, her sharp eyes missing nothing. It seemed she had pages of notes before the event had ended. Chris and I quickly realized that our only hope was to have Sylvia fall in love with our reception. The next morning, Chris came to my room with her maids and we got ready together. We wanted to make an effort to look similar enough so it was clear we were in charge, but not so much alike we looked silly. It was kind of fun having so many girls in my room. The maids all knew one another, and they talked animatedly behind us as they worked. It reminded me of how things had felt when May was here. Hours before our guests were supposed to arrive, Chris and I made our way to the parlor to double-check everything one last time. Unlike the other reception, we were foregoing place cards and letting our guests sit wherever they liked. The band came to practice in the space, and as a lucky bonus, it seemed our choice of fabrics to cover the bland walls made for great acoustics. I straightened Chris's necklace as we quizzed each other on the conversational phrases one last time. She sounded very natural speaking Italian. "Thank you," she said. "Grazie," I answered. "No, no," she replied, facing me, I mean, thank you. You did an amazing job on this, and I don't know. I thought that after Marley, you might give up. I was afraid that I'd be doing this alone. But you've worked so hard. You've done great. Thanks, you have too. I don't know if I would have survived if I had to work with Celeste. You made it almost easy. Chris smiled. I meant it too. She was tireless. And you're right. It's been hard without Marley. But I wouldn't quit. This is going to be great. Chris bit her lip and considered for a moment. Quickly, as if she might lose her nerve, she spoke. So you're still competing then? You still want Maxon? It wasn't like I didn't know what we were all doing here, but none of the other girls had spoken about it like that. I was caught off guard for a moment, wondering if I should answer her. And if I did, what would I say?
Girls!
Sylvia trilled, rushing in through the doorway. I'd never been so grateful to see that woman.
It's nearly time, are you ready?
Behind her, the queen came in, a soothing calm to balance Sylvia's energy. She studied the room, admiring our work. It was a huge relief to see her smile.
Almost ready, Chris said. We just have a few details to take care of. One we specifically need you and the queen for.
Oh? Sylvia said curiously. The queen approached us then, her dark eyes warm with pride.
It's beautiful, and you both look stunning.
Thank you, we chorused. The pale blue dresses with large gold accents had been my idea. Festive and lovely, but not too over the top.
Well, you might notice our necklaces, Chris said. We thought that if they were similar, it would help people identify us as hosts.
Excellent idea, Sylvia said, scribbling on her clipboard. Chris and I smiled at each other. Since you are both hosts here, too, we thought you should have ones as well, I said as Chris pulled the boxes off the table.
You didn't, the queen gasped.
For me?
Sylvia asked.
Of course,
Chris said sweetly, handing over the jewelry. You've both been so helpful. This is your project, too, I added. I could see how touched the queen was by our gesture, but Sylvia was completely speechless. I suddenly wondered if anyone at the palace ever gave her any kind of attention. Yes, we'd thought up the idea yesterday as a way to get Sylvia on our side, but I was glad we'd done it for more than just that now. Sylvia might be overwhelming, but she did try to do all this instruction for our benefit. I vowed to do a better job of thanking her. A butler told us our guests were arriving, and Chris and I stood on either side of the double doors to welcome people as they came. The band started playing softly in the background, maids began circling with hors d'oeuvres, and we were ready. Elise, Celeste, and Natalie were walking toward us, surprisingly on time. Once they caught sight of our setup, the billowing fabric covering the drab walls, the sparkling centerpieces towering on our tables, the overflowing flowers, there was a clear ache in the eyes of Elise and Celeste. Natalie, however, was too excited to be bothered.
It smells like the gardens, she said with a sigh, practically dancing into the room.
A bit too much like it, Celeste added. You're going to give people a headache. Leave it to her to find fault with something beautiful.
Try to sit at different tables, Chris suggested as they poured past. The Italians are here to make friends.
Celeste sucked her teeth, acting as if this was putting her out. I wanted to tell her to pull it together. We had been on our best behavior for her reception. But then I heard the warm, buzzing conversation of the Italian women as they came down the hall and forgot all about her. The best way to describe the Italian ladies was statuesque. They were tall, golden-skinned, and absolutely beautiful. As if that wasn't enough, they were all so good-natured. It was like they carried the sun inside their souls and let it shine out on everything around them. The Italian monarchy was even younger than Ilia's. They had been closed off to our attempts at friendship for decades, according to the packet I'd read, and this was the only time they'd ever reached out to us. This meeting was the first step toward a closer relationship with a growing government. It had been frightening to think about until the moment they walked through the doorway and their kindness melted my worries. They kissed Chris and me on both cheeks and yelled, "Salve!" I happily tried to match their level of enthusiasm.
I botched some of my Italian phrases, but our visitors were gracious, laughing off my mistakes and helping to correct me. Their English was impressive, and we doted on one another's hairstyles and dresses. It seemed we'd made a good first impression appearance-wise, and that helped me relax. I ended up settling in for most of the party next to Orabella and Noemi, two of the princess's cousins.
"This is delicious,"
Orabella cried, raising her glass of wine. "We're glad you like it," I replied, worrying that I was coming across as too shy. They were so loud when they talked.
"You must have some," she insisted.
I hadn't had anything to drink since Halloween, and I wasn't very fond of alcohol in the first place. I didn't want to be rude, though, so I took the glass she handed me and sipped. It was incredible. Champagne was all bubbles, but the deep red wine had several flavors overlapping, each coming to the forefront in its own time. I sighed.
Now, Noemi said, drawing my attention to her. "This Maxim is handsome. How can I get into the selection?"
"A heap of paperwork," I joked.
"That's all? Where's my pen?"
Orabella cut in.
"I will take some of this paper, too. I would love to take Maxim home with me."
I laughed. "Trust me, it's a bit of a mess in here."
"You need more wine," Noemi insisted.
"Absolutely,"
Orabella seconded, and they called over a butler to refill my glass.
"Have you ever been to Italy?" Noemi asked.
I shook my head. Before the selection, I'd never even left my province.
"You must come," Orabella insisted. "You can stay with me any time." "You always hog the company," Noemi complained. "She stays with me."
I felt the wine warming me all over, and their excitement was making me almost too happy.
"So, is he a good kisser?"
Noemi asked. I choked a little on the sip I was taking, pulling the glass away to laugh. I was trying not to give too much away, but they knew.
"How good?" Orabella demanded.
When I didn't answer, she waved her hand.
"Have some more wine," she exclaimed.
I pointed an accusing finger at them, realizing what they were doing. "You two are nothing but trouble." They threw back their heads laughing, and I couldn't help but join them. Admittedly, girl talk was much more tempting when we weren't all competing for the same boy, but I couldn't get too drawn into this. I stood to leave before I ended up passed out under the table. "He's very romantic, when he wants to be," I said. They clapped and laughed as I walked away, smiling at how playful they were. After I got some water and food in me, I played some of the folk songs I'd learned on my violin, and most of the room sang along. Out of the corner of my eye, I spotted Sylvia taking notes and tapping her foot to the beat at the same time. When Chris got up and proposed a toast to the Queen and Sylvia for their help, the room applauded them. When I raised my glass to our guests, they shrieked with delight, downing their glasses and then throwing them against the walls. Chris and I weren't expecting that and shrugged before tossing ours as well. The poor maids scuttled around to clean the shattered pieces as the band started up again and the whole room began to dance. Perhaps the highlight was Natalie on top of the table, doing some kind of dance that made her look like an octopus. Queen Amberley sat in a corner, speaking jovially with the Italian queen. I felt a rush of accomplishment at the sight, and was so engrossed I nearly jumped when Elise addressed me.
"Yours is better," she said reluctantly but genuinely. "You two really pulled together an incredible reception."
"Thanks. I was worried for a while. We got off to such a bad start."
"I know. That makes it even more impressive. It looks like you two have been working for weeks."
She looked around the room, staring longingly at the bright decor. I put a hand on her shoulder. "You know, Elise, anyone could see yesterday that you worked the hardest on your team. I'm sure Sylvia will make sure Maxon knows that."
"You think?"
"Of course. And I promise if this is some sort of competition and you lose, I'll tell Maxon myself what a good job you did." She squinted her already thin eyes.
"You would do that?"
"Sure, why not?" I said with a smile. Elise shook her head.
"I really admire you for how you are. Honest, I guess. But you need to realize we're competing, America."
My smile disappeared. I wouldn't lie and say anything bad about you, but I wouldn't go out of my way to tell Maxon you did something good. I can't.
It doesn't have to be that way, I said quietly. She shook her head.
Yes, it does. This isn't just some prize. This is a husband, a crown, a future. And you probably have the most to gain or lose by it.
I stood there, completely stunned. I thought we were friends. Except for Celeste, I really trusted these girls. Was I too blind to see how hard they were fighting?
That doesn't mean I don't like you, she went on. I like you a lot, but I can't cheer for you to win.
I nodded, still taking in her words. It was obvious I wasn't as mentally in this as she was. One more thing that made me doubt my ability to do this job. Elise smiled over my shoulder, and I turned to see the Italian princess coming toward us.
Pardon me, can I have the hostess, please?
She asked in her lovely accent. Elise gave her a curtsy before heading back to the dancing. I tried to shake off that conversation and focus on the person I was meant to impress.
Princess Nicoletta, I'm sorry we haven't gotten to speak much today, I said, giving her a curtsy myself.
Oh, no, you've been very busy. My cousins, they love you.
I laughed. They're very funny. Nicoletta pulled me into a corner of the room.
We've been hesitant to make bonds with Ilya. Our people are much freer than yours.
I can see that.
No, no, she said seriously. I mean in personal freedoms. They enjoy more than you. You have the castes still, yes?
Suddenly understanding that this was more than a friendly conversation, I nodded.
We watch, of course. We see what happens here. The riots, the rebels. It seems people are not happy.
I wasn't sure what to say. Your Majesty, I don't know if I'm the best person to talk to about this. I don't really control anything.
Nicoletta took my hands.
But you could.
A shiver ran through me. Was she saying what I thought?
We saw what happened to the girl. The blonde? She whispered.
Marley. I nodded. She was my best friend. She smiled.
And we saw you. There's not much footage, but we saw you run. We saw you fight.
The look in her eyes mirrored the way Queen Amberley had looked at me this morning. There was unmistakable pride there.
We are very much interested in forming a bond with a powerful nation, if that nation can change. Unofficially, if there is anything we can do to help you acquire the crown, let us know. You have our full support.
She crammed a piece of paper in my hand and walked away. As she turned her back, she shouted out something in Italian, and the room roared with delight. I didn't have pockets, so I quickly shoved the note in my bra, praying that no one would notice. Our reception went on much longer than the first, and I suspected it was because our guests were too happy to actually leave. Still, for as lengthy as it was, the whole thing passed in a blur. Hours later, I headed back to my room, completely worn out. I was much too full to even think about dinner, and though it was early in the evening, the idea of going straight to bed was very appealing. Before I could even look at my bed, however, Anne walked up to me with a surprise. I gasped and took the letter from her hand immediately. I had to give the postal workers at the palace credit. They were very fast. I tore open the envelope and went to the balcony, soaking up my father's words and the last few rays of sunshine at the same time.
Dear America, you'll need to write a letter to May soon. When she saw this was intended for my eyes only, she was very disappointed. I have to say, I was a little caught off guard myself. I don't know what I was expecting, but certainly not what you asked. First, it's true. When we came to visit, I spoke with Maxon, and he was very clear about his intentions toward you. I don't think he has it in him to be less than genuine, and I believed, and still do, that he cares about you very much. I think if the whole process was simpler, he'd have chosen you already. Part of me thinks the slowness is on your side. Am I wrong? The simple answer is yes. I approve of Maxon, and if you want to be with him, I support that. If you don't, I support that too. I love you and I want you to be happy. Maybe that means you live in our scrubby little house instead of a palace. I'm fine with that. As for your other question, I have to say yes to that too. America, I know you don't see much in yourself, but you need to start. We told you for years you were talented, but you didn't believe it until your bookings went up. I remember the day you saw the full week and knew it was because of your voice and the way you play, and you were so proud. It was like you were suddenly aware of everything you could do, and we've said for as long as I can remember that you are beautiful. But I'm not sure you ever truly saw yourself that way until you were picked for the selection. You have it in you to lead, America. You have a good head on your shoulders. You are willing to learn, and perhaps most importantly, you show compassion. That is something people in this country yearn for more than you know. If you want the crown, America, take it. Take it, because it should be yours. And yet, if you don't want that burden, I could never blame you. I would welcome you home with open arms. I love you, Dad.
The tears spilled out quietly. He genuinely thought I could do it. He was the only one. Well, he and Nicoletta. Nicoletta?
I'd forgotten completely about the note. I fished inside my dress and pulled it out. It was a telephone number. She didn't even put her name on it. I couldn't imagine how much she was risking to make that offer. I held the tiny piece of paper and the letter from my dad in my hands. I thought of Aspen's certainty that I couldn't be a princess. I remembered the last place spot in the public poll. I thought of Maxon's cryptic promise earlier this week. I closed my eyes and tried to search within myself. Could I really do this? Could I be the next princess of Ilia? Chapter 20. The day after the Italian reception, we gathered in the women's room after breakfast. The queen was absent, and none of us knew what that meant. I bet she's helping Sylvia write up the final report, Elise guessed.
I don't think she's supposed to have much of a say, Chris countered.
Maybe she's hungover, Natalie offered as she pressed her finger to her temples.
Just because you are doesn't mean she is, Celeste spat.
She might not be feeling well, I said. She tends to get sick a lot.
Chris nodded.
I wonder why that is.
Didn't she grow up in the South? Elise asked. I hear the air and water aren't very clean down there. Maybe it's because of how she was raised.
I hear everything is bad below Sumner, Celeste added.
She's probably just resting, I interjected. There's a report tonight and she simply wants to be ready.
She's smart. It's barely 10 and I need a nap.
Yeah, we should all take naps, Natalie said wearily. A maid entered with a small platter and walked quietly across the room, almost too nimble to be noticed.
Wait, Chris said. You don't think they'll talk about the reception stuff on the report, do you?
Celeste groaned. I hated that stupid thing. You and America lucked out.
You're joking, right? Do you have any...
Chris's words dropped off as the maid stopped just to my left, revealing a small folded note on the platter. I felt everyone's eyes on me as I tentatively picked up the letter and read it.
Is that from Maxon?
Chris asked, trying not to seem as interested as she was.
Yes.
I didn't look up.
What's it say?
She probed.
That he needs to see me for a moment.
Celeste laughed.
Sounds like you're in trouble.
I sighed and stood to follow the maid from the room.
Guess there's only one way to find out.
Maybe he's finally kicking her out, Celeste whispered, loudly enough for me to hear.
You think? Natalie asked a little too excitedly.
A chill went through me. Maybe he was kicking me out. If he wanted to talk to me or spend time with me, wouldn't he have said it differently? Maxon was waiting in the hallway, and I walked up timidly. He didn't look upset, but he did seem tense. I braced myself.
So?
He took my arm. We have 15 minutes,
What I'm about to show you, you can't share with anyone. Do you understand?
I nodded.
All right, then.
We darted up the stairs all the way to the third floor. Gently but quickly, Maxon pulled me down the hallway to a set of white double doors.
15 minutes,
he reminded. 15 minutes. He took a key out of his pocket and unlocked one of the doors, holding it open so I could go in before him. The room was wide and bright, with lots of windows and two doors, opening onto a balcony along the wall. There was a bed, a massive armoire, and a table with chairs. But other than that, the room was empty. No paintings on the walls, no pieces on the inlaid shelves. Even the paint was a little drab.
It's the princess's suite,
Maxon said quietly. My eyes widened.
I know, it's not much to look at right now. The princess is supposed to choose the decor, so once my mother moved to the queen's suite, the room was stripped.
Queen Amberlee had slept here. Something about the room felt magical. Maxon came up behind me and started pointing.
Those doors go to the balcony, and over there, he pointed to the other end of the room, those doors go to the princess's personal study. Right here,
he noted a door to our right.
This goes to my room. Can't have the princess too far off.
I felt myself blush thinking of sleeping here with Maxon so close. He stepped toward the armoire.
And this? Behind this piece of furniture is the escape to the safe room. You can get to other places in the palace this way too, but that's its main purpose.
He sighed.
This is a slight misuse, but I thought it would be worth it.
Maxon placed his hand on a hidden latch, and the armoire and the panel of wall behind it swung forward. I saw him smile at the space behind it.
Right on time.
I wouldn't miss it, another voice said. I sucked in a breath. There was no way that voice belonged to who I thought it did. I stepped to see around the hulking piece of furniture and Maxon's smiling face. There, dressed in very plain clothes and with her hair pulled into a bun, was Marley. Marley? I whispered, sure I had to be dreaming. What are you doing here? I've missed you so much, she cried, and ran to me with her arms open. With her hands out, I could see clearly the red healing welts on her palms. It really was Marley. She wrapped me in a hug and we crumpled to the ground. I was so overcome. I couldn't stop from crying and asking over and over what in the world she was doing here. When I quieted down long enough, Maxon got my attention.
10 minutes, I'll be waiting outside. Marley, you can leave the way you came.
She gave him her word, and Maxon left us alone. I don't understand, I said. You were supposed to go south. You were supposed to be an aid. Where's Carter? She smiled through my misunderstanding. We've been here the whole time. I just started working in the kitchens, and Carter's still on the mend, but I think he'll be in the stables soon. On the mend? So many questions were racing through my mind. I wasn't sure why that one popped out. Yes, he walks and can sit and stand, but it's hard for him to do anything too strenuous. He's helping in the kitchens until he's fully healed. He's going to be fine, though. And look at me, she said, holding out both hands. We've been very well taken care of. They aren't pretty, but at least they don't hurt anymore. I carefully touched the swollen lines on her palms, sure they couldn't actually be painless. But she didn't flinch, and after a moment I slid my hand into hers. It felt funny, but at the same time completely natural. Marley was here, and I was holding her hand. So Maxon's had you in the palace the whole time? She nodded. After the caning, he was afraid we would be hurt if we were left on our own, so he kept us here. Two other servants, a brother and sister who had family in Panama, were sent instead. We're going by new names, and Carter is growing out his beard, so after a while we'll blend in. Not a lot of people know we're in the palace in the first place. Just a few of the cooks I work with, one of the nurses and Maxon. I don't even think the guards know, because they have to answer to the king, and he wouldn't be pleased to find out. She shook her head before quickly moving on. Our little apartment is small, basically just enough room for our bed and some shelves, but at least it's clean. I'm trying to sew us a new bedspread, but I'm not.
Hold on. Our bed? As in you share one?
She smiled. We got married 2 days ago. I told Max in the morning we were came that I loved Carter, and that he was the one I wanted to marry, and I apologized for hurting him. He didn't care, of course. He came to me 2 days ago, saying there was some big event happening, and that if we wanted to get married, this was the time.
I counted back. 2 days ago was when the German Federation had come. The entire palace staff was either helping serve them or preparing for the ladies from Italy.
Maxon gave me away. I'm not sure I'll ever see my parents again. The more distance they have from me, the better.
I could tell she was pained to say so, but I understood why. If it had been me and I was suddenly an aide, the kindest thing I could do for my family was disappear. It would take time, but people would forget. Eventually, my parents would recover. To push away her sad thoughts, she fanned out her left hand, and I noticed the little band across her finger for the first time. It was twine, tied in a simple knot, but it was a clear statement. I'm taken.
I think I'm going to have to get him to give me a new one soon. I'm already fraying this one. I guess if he works in the stables, I'll have to make him a new ring every day.
She playfully shrugged.
Not that I mind.
My mind had jumped to another question that I worried might be rude to ask, but I knew I would never be able to have this kind of conversation with my mom or Kenna.
So, have you...
You know? It took her a moment to understand, but then she laughed.
Oh, yes we have.
We both giggled. How is it?
Honestly, a little uncomfortable at first. The second time was better.
Oh. I didn't know what else to say.
Yeah.
There was a bit of a pause.
I've been really lonely without you. I miss you.
I played with a little piece of twine on her finger.
I miss you too. Maybe once you're the princess, I can sneak up here all the time.
I snorted. I'm not so sure that'll happen.
What do you mean?
She asked, her face turning serious.
You're still his favorite, right?
I shrugged.
What happened?
The question was laced with concern, and I didn't want to admit that it had started with losing her. It wasn't her fault.
Just things. America, what's going on?
I sighed. After you got caned, I was upset with Maxon. It took me a while to realize that he wouldn't have done something like that if he could have stopped it. Marley nodded.
He tried so hard, America, and when he couldn't, he did everything he could to make the situation better. So don't be mad at him.
I'm not anymore, but I'm also not sure I want to be the princess. I don't know if I could do what he did. And then there was this poll in a magazine Celeste showed me. The people don't like me, Marley. I'm at the bottom.
I'm not sure I have what it takes. I was never a good choice, and it seems like I'm plummeting. And now... Now... I think Maxon wants Chris.
Chris, when did that happen?
I have no idea, and I don't know what to do. Part of me thinks it's a good thing. She'd make a better princess. And if he really likes her, I want them to be happy. And he's supposed to do another elimination really soon. When he called me out today, I thought I might be going home.
Marley laughed.
You're so ridiculous. If Maxon didn't have feelings for you, he'd have sent you home a long time ago. The reason you're still here is because he refuses to lose hope.
Something between a choke and a laugh came out of my mouth.
I wish we could talk more, but I should go, she said. We're taking advantage of guards changing to do this.
I don't care that it's short. I'm just glad to know you're okay.
She pulled me in for a hug.
Don't give up yet, all right?
I won't. Maybe you could send me a letter or something sometime.
That might work. We'll see.
She let me go and we stood together.
If they pulled me, I would have voted for you. I've always thought it should be you.
I blushed.
Go on now. Say hello to your husband for me.
She smiled.
I will.
Nimbly, she went over to the armoire and found the latch. For some reason, I thought the caning would break her, but she was stronger now. She even carried herself differently. Marley turned to blow me a kiss and disappeared. I quickly exited the room and found that Maxim was waiting in the hallway. At the sound of the door, he looked up from his book, smiling, and I went over to sit by him.
Why didn't you tell me sooner?
I had to make sure they were safe first. My father doesn't know I did this, and until I knew it wouldn't endanger them, I had to keep it to myself. I'm hoping to arrange for you to see her more, but that will take time.
I felt my shoulders lighten, as if the bricks of worry I'd been carrying around were falling off all at once. The happiness at seeing Marley, the assurance that Maxim was as kind as I thought he was, and the general relief that this meeting wasn't about him sending me home were overwhelming.
Thank you, I whispered.
Of course.
I wasn't sure what else to say. After a moment, Maxim cleared his throat.
I know that you are averse to doing the difficult parts of this job, but there are a lot of opportunities here. I think you could do great things. I can tell you see the prince in me now, but that had to come eventually if you were ever going to truly be mine.
My eyes held his.
I know.
I can't read you anymore. I used to be able to see it in the beginning when you didn't really care for me, and when things changed between us, you looked at me differently. Now there are moments when I think it's there and others when it seems like you're already gone.
I nodded.
I'm not asking you to say you love me. I'm not asking for you to suddenly decide you want to be a princess. I just need to know if you want to be here at all.
That was the question, wasn't it? I still didn't know if I could do the job, but I wasn't sure I wanted to give up on it. And seeing this kindness in Maxon shifted my heart. There was still so much to consider, but I couldn't give up. Not now. Maxim was resting on his leg, and I slid mine under his. He gave me a welcoming squeeze.
If you'll still have me, I want to stay.
Maxim let out a relieved sigh.
I'd like that very much.
I returned to the women's room after a quick stop in the bathroom. No one said anything until I sat down, and it was Chris who was bold enough to ask.
What was that all about?
I looked not just to her, but to all the watching eyes. I'd rather not say. With my puffy face, a response like that was enough to make it seem like nothing good could have come from the meeting. But if that was what I had to say to protect Marley, then I was fine with it. What really stung was Celeste pressing her lips together to hide her smile, Natalie's raised eyebrows as she pretended to read her borrowed magazine, and the hopeful glance between Chris and Elise. The competition was deeper than I had guessed. Chapter 21. We were spared the humiliation of dealing with the aftermath of our receptions on the report. The visits from our foreign friends were mentioned in passing, but the actual events were kept from the public. It wasn't until the next morning that Sylvia and the Queen came to speak to us about our performances.
It was a very daunting task we gave you, and it absolutely could have gone horribly wrong. I'm pleased to say, however, that both teams did very well.
Sylvia looked at each of us appraisingly. We all sighed, and I reached for Chris's hand, as she did the same. As confused as I was about her and Maxon, I knew there was no way I could have made it through that without her.
If I'm honest, one event was slightly better than the other, but you should all be proud of your accomplishments. We received thank you letters from our longtime friends in the German Federation for your gracious hosting, Sylvia said, looking at Celeste, Natalie, and Elise. There were a few minor hiccups, and I don't think any of us truly enjoy such serious affairs, but they certainly did. And as for you two, Sylvia turned toward Chris and me, the ladies from Italy enjoyed themselves immensely. They were quite impressed with your style and the food, and they made a special point to ask for the wine you served, so bravo!
I wouldn't be surprised if Ilya gained a wonderful new ally based on that welcome. You're to be commended.
Chris squeaked and I let out a nervous laugh, happy enough that it was over, let alone that we'd beat the others. Sylvia went on to talk about how she would be writing up an official report to hand over to the King and Maxon, but said that none of us had a thing to worry about. As she spoke, a maid scurried into the room and ran over to the Queen, whispering in her ear.
Absolutely they may, the Queen said, suddenly standing and walking forward. The maid rushed back and opened the door for the King and Maxon. I knew men weren't supposed to come into this room without the Queen's permission, but it was comical to see it in action. As they entered, we stood to curtsy, but they didn't seem to care about formalities.
Dear ladies, we are sorry to intrude, but we have urgent news, the King informed us. I'm afraid we've had a development with the war in New Asia,
Maxon said firmly.
The situation is so dire that Father and I are leaving this very moment to see if we can do any good.
What's wrong? The Queen asked, clutching her chest.
It's nothing to worry about, my love, the King said confidently.
But that couldn't be a completely honest statement if they had to rush out of here so suddenly.
Maxon walked over to his mother. They had a brief, whispered conversation before she kissed his forehead. He hugged her and stepped away. The King then began rattling off a list of instructions to the Queen, while Maxon came to say goodbye to each of us. His goodbye to Natalie was so short it almost didn't happen. Natalie didn't seem too bothered, and I didn't know what to make of that. Was she actually not worried by Maxon's lack of affection, or was she so bothered that she was forcing herself to be calm? Celeste draped herself across Maxon and exploded into the worst display of fake crying that I'd ever seen. It reminded me of May when she was younger, thinking tears would magically bring money for us to have what we wanted. When he went to untangle himself, she planted a kiss on his lips that he promptly, and in as polite a manner as possible, wiped away after his back was turned. Elise and Chris were so close that I heard his goodbyes to them.
Call ahead and tell them to go easy on us, he said to Elise.
I'd almost forgotten that the main reason she was still here was that she had family ties to leaders in New Asia. I wondered if this war going downhill would cost her her spot. Then I suddenly realized that I had no clue what Ilya stood to lose if we lost this war.
If you get me a phone, I will talk to my parents, she promised.
Maxon nodded and kissed Elise's hand, then walked over to Chris. She immediately laced her fingers in his.
Will you be in danger? She asked quietly, her voice beginning to shake.
I don't know. During our last trip to New Asia, the situation wasn't nearly so tense. I can't be sure this time.
His voice was so tender, I felt they should have been having this conversation in private. Chris lifted her gaze to the ceiling and sighed, and in that quick second, Maxon looked over to me. I averted my eyes.
Please be careful, she whispered. A tear fell onto her cheek.
Of course, my dear.
Maxon gave her a silly little salute, which made her laugh a bit. He then kissed her cheek and put his lips to her ear.
Please try to keep my mother entertained. She worries.
He pulled back to look into her eyes, and Chris nodded once and let his hands go. The second they were no longer touching, a tremor went through her body. Maxon's hands twitched for a second, like he was going to embrace her, but then he stepped away and started to walk toward me. As if Maxon's words of last week weren't enough, here was physical proof of their relationship. By the look of it, they had something very sweet and real. One glimpse of Chris with her face in her hands was proof of how much she cared for him. Either that, or she was an incredible actress. I tried to gauge his expression when he looked at me versus the way he had looked at Chris. Was it the same? Was there less warmth there?
Try not to get into any trouble while I'm gone, all right? He said teasingly.
He didn't joke with Chris. Did that mean something? I raised my right hand. I promise to be on my best behavior. He chuckled.
Excellent, one less thing to worry about.
What about us?
Should we worry?
Maxon shook his head. We should be able to smooth over whatever's going on. Father can be very diplomatic and...
You are such an idiot sometimes, I said, as Maxon's brow furrowed. I mean, about you. Should I be worrying about you?
His face was very serious then, and did nothing to help my fears. Flying in and flying out. If we can make it to the ground.
Maxon swallowed once, and I saw how frightened he was. I wanted to ask something else, but I didn't know what to say. He cleared his throat.
America, before I go.
I looked up to Maxon's face and felt the tears rising.
I need you to know that everything... Maxon! The king barked.
Maxon lifted his head and waited for his father's instructions.
We need to go.
Maxon nodded.
Goodbye, America,
he said quietly, and lifted my hand to his lips. As he did so, he noted the little homemade bracelet I wore. He studied it, seeming confused, then kissed my hand tenderly. That little feather of a kiss sent me back to a memory that felt years old. He had kissed my hand like that my first night in the palace, when I'd yelled at him, when he'd let me stay anyway. The other girl's eyes were glued to the king and Maxon as they left, but I was watching the queen. Her entire body seemed weak. How many times would her husband and only child be put in danger before she cracked? The moment the door shut behind her family, Queen Amberlee blinked a few times, inhaled deeply, and pulled herself up to her full height. Forgive me, ladies, but this sudden news will require a lot of work from me. I think it's best if I go to my room so I can focus. She was fighting so hard. How about I have lunch delivered here so you can eat at your leisure, and I will join you all for dinner tonight? We nodded. Excellent, she said and turned to leave. I knew she was strong. She'd grown up in a poor neighborhood in a poor province, working in a factory until she was chosen for the selection. Then, once she was queen, she suffered miscarriage after miscarriage before she finally had a child. She would make it to her room looking like a lady, as her position demanded, but she would cry once she was alone. After the queen left, Celeste went too. Then I decided I didn't have to stay either. I went to my room, wanting to be alone and to think. I kept wondering about Chris. How had she and Maxon suddenly connected? Not too long ago, he was making me promises about our future. He couldn't have been that interested in her if he was saying such intimate things to me. It must have happened after that. The day passed quickly. After dinner, as my maids quietly helped me prepare for bed, a single sentence lifted me from my reflections. Do you know who I found in here this morning, miss? Anne asked as she gently pulled a brush through my hair. Who? Officer Ledger. I froze, but only for a fraction of a second. Oh, I said. I kept my eyes on my reflection as they continued. Yes, Lucy said. He said he was doing a sweep of your room, something about security. She looked a little confused. It was strange, though, Anne said, echoing Lucy's expression. He was in his plain clothes, not his uniform. He shouldn't be doing security work on his time off. He must be very dedicated, I commented in a disconnected tone. I think he is, Lucy said with awe. Whenever I see him around the palace, he's always noticing things. He's a very good soldier. True, Mary said matter-of-factly. Some of the men who come through here really aren't fit for the job. And he looks good in his plain clothes. Most of them look terrible once you get them out of their uniforms, Lucy commented. Mary giggled and blushed, and even Anne cracked a smile. It had been a long time since they'd seemed so relaxed. On another day, in another moment, it might be fun to gossip about the guards. Not today, though. All I could think about was that there was a letter in my room from Aspen. I wanted to peek over my shoulder at my jar, but I didn't dare. It felt like an eternity before they left me alone. I forced myself to be patient and wait a few minutes to make sure they didn't come back. Finally, I darted over to my bed and clutched my jar. Sure enough, a tiny slip of paper was waiting for me. Maxon is gone. This changes everything. Chapter 22.
Hello?
I whispered, following the instructions Aspen had left for me the day before. I cautiously walked into a room, lit only by the fading daylight spilling in through the gossamer curtains, but it was enough for me to see the excitement on Aspen's face. I closed the door behind me, and he immediately ran over and scooped me up.
I've missed you.
I missed you, too. I was so busy with that reception I barely had time to breathe.
Glad it's over. Did you have a hard time getting here?
He joked. I giggled. Seriously, Aspen, you're way too good at your job. It was almost comical how simple his idea was. The queen was a little more relaxed when it came to running the palace. Or maybe she was distracted. Either way, she'd made dinner an option, in your room or downstairs. My maids prepped me for the meal, but instead of heading to the dining room, I walked across the hall to Bariel's old room. It was too easy. He smiled as he took in my praise and sat me down in the back corner of the room on some pillows he'd already piled there.
Are you comfortable?
I nodded and expected him to sit too, but he didn't. Instead, he pushed over a large couch, which blocked the door from sight, and then pulled in a table that brushed the top of our heads as we sat on the floor. Finally, he grabbed a bundle he'd left on top of the table. It smelled like food, and settled next to me.
Almost like home, huh?
He moved behind me so I was between his legs. The position was so familiar and the space was so small that it did feel a little like our old treehouse. It was like he'd taken a piece of something I thought was gone forever and placed it neatly in my hands. It's even better, I sighed, leaning into him. After a minute, I felt his fingers combing down my hair. It gave me shivers. For a while, we sat there in silence, and I closed my eyes and focused on the sound of Aspen's breathing. Not so long ago, I'd done the same thing with Maxon. But this was different. If I had to, I thought I could pick Aspen's breathing out of a crowd. I knew him so well. And clearly he knew me. This tiny bit of peace was everything I'd been aching for, and Aspen made it real.
What are you thinking about, Mare?
Lots of things, I sighed. Home, you, Maxon, the selection, everything.
What are you thinking about all of that?
Mostly how confused I get about them. Like how I'll think I understand what's happening to me, and then something shifts and my feelings change. Aspen was quiet for a moment, and his voice sounded pained when he asked,
Do your feelings about me change a lot?
No, I said, pushing myself closer to him. If anything, you're the one constant. I know that if everything turns upside down, you'll still be here, in the exact same place. Everything gets so crazy that my love for you gets pushed to the background, but I know it's always there. Does that make sense?
It does. I know I make this whole thing a lot more complicated than it already is. I'm glad to know I'm not completely out of the running, though.
Aspen wrapped his arms around me, like he could hold me there forever. I haven't forgotten us, I promised.
Sometimes, I feel like Maxon and I are in our own version of the selection. It's just him and me, and one of us will get you in the end, and I can't decide who's worse off. Maxon doesn't exactly know we're competing, so we might not be able to try as hard. But then I have to hide, so it's not like I can give you everything he can. It's not really a fair fight either way.
You shouldn't think about it that way.
I don't know how else to see it, Mare.
I exhaled. Let's not talk about that.
All right. I don't like talking about him anyway. What about all the other stuff you're confused about? What's going on?
Do you like being a soldier? I asked, turning toward him. He nodded enthusiastically as he reached down and opened the food.
I love it, Mare. I thought I'd hate every minute, but it's fantastic.
He popped a chunk of bread into his mouth and kept talking.
I mean, there's the obvious stuff, like I'm always being fed. They want us to be big, so there's plenty of food. And the injections, too,
he said, amending his thoughts.
but they're not so bad, and I get an allowance. Even though I have everything I need, I get money.
He stopped for a moment.